This is the Colonial Department's Extra Credit, a bonus show that provides some nugget-sized tidbits of Philippine colonial history. It's based on the most recent episode, so if you haven't yet, check out Season 5, Episode 13, Union Jack and Union Jade, then hop on back here for some extra credit. So, we've come to the end of Season 5. It was quite a diverse set of episodes. We kick things off with the tale of an unorthodox Governor General and his brief but interesting flirtations, then ended right here with the story of the Chinese expulsions right after the British invasion. Along the way, we went on tour with the science expedition up Mount Banahaw, hunted for gold with the conquistadors, took a little side trip to the Caroline Islands, and defended ourselves against slave raids. According to our stats, our biggest episode this season was Season 5, Episode 9, Manila Starves, which is all about food and famine during World War II. I'm extremely proud of that episode, and by all means, if you haven't yet, go give it a listen. Anyway, you're here for some extra credit, so here it is. In my last episode, I talked about how the Chinese community in Manila was dislocated by the British invasion. But China is a big country with lots of people, so when we talk about the Chinese in the Philippines during the Spanish period, it's important to know where they came from and what they wanted to accomplish. Here are three things about them that I had to leave on the cutting room floor. One, many migrants to the Philippines came from the Minan area of southern China. They're commonly referred to as Hokkien Chinese after the dialect that they speak, or Fujianese after a major province in the area. During that time, Fujian became the gateway for the arrival of the Manila Galleon, which brought silver from Mexico to trade for goods like silk. In fact, the name the Spanish gave to the galleon was Nao de China, or China ship. As the center for the Manila-Minan trade, the prefecture of Jiangzhou became very prosperous. 2. Why was the Chinese Empire so hot for silver? Well, in 1570, the rulers of the Ming Dynasty set up a unified tax system, and everything you owed to the government had to be paid in silver. That was perfect timing for the Spanish because A. Their territories in the Americas happened to have lots and lots of silver, and B. Their newly established colony in Manila could become the perfect port for the trade. And so began the exchange from Minan to Manila to Acapulco, or what we now call the galleon trade. 3. Chinese immigrants to Manila were often linked to the Minan-Manila trade. A scholar has described their migration as a Huashang pattern. First, merchants, traders, and agents moved in, and then miners and other workers came after, producing or procuring goods that would be shipped back to the homeland. Some of these migrants would stay and form families, or sometimes even second families, because they still had wives back home. But according to this scholar, these Chinese immigrants often thought of themselves as sojourners, someone who would just stay in this new place for a little while. This is among the many reasons why the question of Chinese assimilation became so fraught and so complex over the years. And now I leave you with a quote from the late Clinton Palanca, who wrote about one of the major contributions of Minan or Fujian Chinese to our culture, Chinese-Filipino food. This is from among his last major works, the cookbook called My Ang Kong's Noodles. In the capital Manila, as well as in the trading ports such as Vigan and Cebu, the influence of Fujianese cooking styles, terms for vegetables and cuts of meat, and even utensils is undeniable. However, the development of these Chinese-based cooking styles already diverged at this early age from southern Fujian, as many New World products from the Colombian exchange made their way to the Philippines and onto Fujian, Guangdong, and Taiwan. As the Spanish colonial presence became more entrenched in Philippine life, the Chinese traders found their place in the social hierarchy. It was not a high one. They were neither the aristocrats nor the colonial subjects, but useful outsiders who were part of the fabric of local life as artisans, shopkeepers, and of course, cooks. And that's it. Hope you learned something new today, and see you very, very soon for some more episodes of the Colonial Department.